ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। Hare Krishna. Good evening, everybody. And welcome to Bhagavad Gita class. And today, the verses are chapter 2, verse text 9 and text 10. Sanjaya uvacha evam uktva rishikesham gaudakesha parantapaha nayotsya iti govindam yuktva tushnim bhabhuvaha. Sanjaya vacha eva muktva rishikesham gaudakesha parantapaha nayotsya iti govindam yuktva tushnim bhabhuvaha. Sanjaya uvacha evam yuktva rishikesham gaudakesha parantapaha nayotsya iti govindam yuktva tushnim bhabhuvaha. Sanjaya vacha evam uktva rishikesham gaudakesha parantapaha nayotsya iti govindam yuktva tushnim bhabhuvaha. Sanjaya vacha evam uktva rishikesham gaudakesha parantapaha nayotsya iti govindam uktva tushnim bhabhuvaha. Sanjaya vacha eva uktva rishikesham gaudakesha parantapaha nayotsya iti govindam uktva tushnim bhabhuvaha. Sanjaya vacha. Sanjaya said, evam, thus, uktva, speaking, rishikesham, unto Krishna, the master of the senses, gudakesha, Arjuna, the master of curbing ignorance, varantapaha, the chastiser of the enemies. Na. Oh, wait. Na yotsye. I shall not fight. Iti. Thus. Govindam. Unto Krishna. the giver of pleasure to the senses. Uktva, saying. Roshnim, silent. Babhuva, became. Ha, certainly. Translation. Sanjaya said, having spoken thus, Arjuna, chastiser of enemies, told Krishna, Govinda, I shall not fight, and fell silent. And the purport is pretty short, so I guess we can read it. Dhritarashtra must have been very glad to understand that Arjuna was not going to fight, and was instead leaving the battlefield for the begging profession. But Sanjaya disappointed him again in relating that Arjuna was competent to kill his enemies, Varantapaha, although Arjuna was, for the time being, overwhelmed with false grief due to family affection. He surrendered unto Krishna, the supreme spiritual master, as a disciple. This indicated that he would soon be free from the false lamentation resulting from family affection, and would be enlightened with perfect knowledge of self-realization, or Krishna consciousness, and would then surely fight. Thus, Dhritarashtra's joy would be frustrated, since Arjuna would be enlightened by Krishna and would fight to the end. Let's read the translation of the next verse. Text 10. O descendant of Bharata, at that time, Krishna, smiling, in the midst of both armies, spoke the following words to the grief-stricken Arjuna. And it's a short purport again. The talk was going on between intimate friends, namely the Rishikesha and the Godakesh. As friends, both of them were on the same level, but one of them voluntarily became the student of the other. Krishna was smiling because a friend had chosen to become his disciple, become a disciple. As Lord of all, he is always in the superior position as the master of everyone. And yet, the Lord agrees to be a friend, a son, or a lover for a devotee who wants him in such a role. But when he was accepted as the master, he at once assumed the role and talked with the disciple like the master, with gravity, as it is required. It appears that the talk between the master and the disciple was openly exchanged in the presence of both armies, so that all were benefited. So the talks of Bhagavad Gita are not for any particular person, society, or community, but they are for all, and friends or enemies are equally entitled to hear them. So yes, although this is the end of verse 10, I actually would like to use that as the starting point for the lecture, because it's so appropriate, and it's actually the entire purpose of us being able to read here, study Bhagavad Gita, because Srila Prabhupada very clearly mentions here that Krishna was smiling because a friend had chosen to become a disciple. This friend, Arjuna, is no ordinary friend. Prabhupada speaks that he's on the same level. Sri Krishna and Arjuna were on the same level. He speaks like, if one is associated with a king, it's not like it's an ordinary thing. One needs to be on the same level, whether it's just social status or intelligence. There was a lecture that Srila Prabhupada had given in 1973 in London, in the same verse, and I listened to it just before the class. And there Srila Prabhupada was making the point that friendship can be really close, especially when the characteristics of both friends are very similar and they are of the same standing. They understand each other that much better. And they know, they understand the heart. There's hridai samvad, or communication with the heart. And this is the case with Arjuna and Krishna. They understand each other so well. Yet, Arjuna has some feelings of dissident. He's he's feeling doubtful. Is this what I'm supposed to actually be doing? And I think not. I think not. And he reveals this to his friend, his dear most friend, Krishna, who's right there beside him in this battlefield. And although they're on the same level, at that point, Arjuna now submits to Krishna as a disciple, seeking his guidance. So although they're both equal, the roles have already changed. That now Arjuna, the equal friend of Krishna, is now becoming a disciple. And we understand that the guru and disciple relationship is different. One no longer relates to each other just as friends or on friendly terms. It becomes more serious. The gravity of the relationship changes. And this is a point where it changes. When Arjuna decides, I don't know any better. I need some guidance. I need some help. And who better to turn to than Parthasarathi? And Krishna, you know, there, wherever they are present, there will always be victory. They're so auspicious in themselves. But nevertheless, Prabhupada makes the point that it's not, Bhagavad Gita was not spoken just for Arjuna. This is the point he's making. It's not that Arjuna became dissident, just overwhelmed with this kind of grief, an idea that I don't want to kill my relatives. And that was the only purpose that Bhagavad Gita was spoken. No, it's like saying or comparing how one person's circumstance cannot relate to the other, yet we learn from experience. We learn from experience of those around us, relatives, friends, gurus. And our tradition, the bhakti tradition, is such that we have a system of checks and balances along our pathway. And one of those checks and balances along our pathway is experience. We do have some kind of experience as to whether or not this process actually works. Does anyone actually have any idea what Srila Prabhupada said the symptom of that would be? What would manifest? Or some of the symptoms that would manifest to show that we're using our energy in the right path, and that we are progressing on the path of spiritual life. Any ideas? Yeah. Okay. That's kind of like, yes, the negative qualities will diminish. But any of the positives, like what we will experience? Yes. This, yes. Haribo. Because in devotional services, joyfully performed. He said, if you're not feeling happy in the process, then there is something not quite right just yet. Because this process is blissful. It's joyfully performed. We're not like a gothic society where it's cool to be depressed all the time. Actually, I was gothic for some time, but I just couldn't be gothic because I was too happy. I was just too happy to be depressed all the time. Could be sad for a while, but you know, my gothic friends could do it all the time, and I just wondered, how can you do it? I just have so much to be so happy about. And at that stage I knew something of Krishna consciousness, but wasn't so seriously following. So actually, when I did start following, I felt that it was real. It was not, you know, theoretical or something you read in books but don't feel the application working. It's a very practical thing. So like that, here we see that this knowledge is very practical. It's not just meant for one person in one time, one age ago. It's very much real, tangible, and applicable to us here and now. So Sanjaya said to Dhritarashtra, and the opening line of Srila Prabhupada's purport was that Dhritarashtra must be very glad to understand that Arjuna was not going to fight, that he's now despondent. Because then that means that there's a chance for him and his sons to keep the kingdom, keep their kingdom that they've gotten already under false terms, due to false dealings. Well, Mahabharata is very vast, and yeah, to mention some of those things would take quite a lot of time, but we all know of those struggles of the Pandavas, the many trials and tribulations that they had to go through. Dhritarashtra, Duryodhan, they wanted them dead, annihilated, out of the picture, wiped out. No trace of Pandu or his sons. And they tried whatever means to be able to do that. So upon hearing this, Dhritarashtra sort of felt a momentary sigh of relief, this is not going to happen. Why? Because he understood that if Arjuna picked up his Gandiva bow, his sons stood no chance. They would all be killed. There was no warrior that could rival Arjuna. Perhaps Karna. But still, Dhritarashtra knew. And then, thus Dhritarashtra's joy would be frustrated. Because Sanjaya then sort of mentioned the competence of Arjuna. Parantapaha, I think it is. Yes, Parantapaha. He is competent to kill his enemies. This is a Kshatriya. So Sanjaya kindly reminds of his competency. But what is Arjuna trying to do here? He's trying to tell Krishna, I don't want to fight. I'm a Kshatriya, but I don't want to fight. Instead, I want to become a renunciant. I want to go sit in a cave and meditate. Beg, the begging profession. This is Srila Prabhupada's words, the begging profession. I'd rather be a renunciant. I don't want to have to enjoy a kingdom stained by the blood shed from killing my own relatives. What is the use? I have no use for that, Krishna. Why should I? I don't want to. I don't want to fight. I don't want this. And Krishna reminds him. Although he smiles, Prabhupada makes a statement and Krishna smiles. What does he do? In the midst of someone's despondency, he smiles. Because he understands that this is a temporary state. A state that Arjuna is lamenting for those things that should not be lamented over. It's a temporary illusion. And it's not that Arjuna doesn't know these things, know the philosophical points that we're different from the body and the soul. It's not that he doesn't know this. It's not that he prefers to speak of religious principles, etc., because he is unaware of the higher truth. But it's for our benefit, of course, to some degree that this is spoken. But it's also because of Arjuna's nature. Arjuna is a devotee. He's a Vaishnava. And he's speaking from the platform of compassion. And he's despondent to fight because he doesn't want to see this kind of suffering and annihilation of his family so that he may prosper. He doesn't want that yet in today's day and age. Many people wouldn't hesitate to slit the throat of their relatives if it is for their benefit, whether it's their mother, brother, father, grandfather, you name it. It's such a contrast. But yet he doesn't want that. But Krishna here shows a sort of contrast in duty. In that you are Kshatriya. It is your dharma to fight. You're part of the administrative class. And in Varnashram, we don't generally hear of someone who's born in a Kshatriya class sort of just giving up to change into renunciate. I think renunciation is advised for the Brahmanas, the Brahmana class of people. And I think Kshatriyas are allowed to take up to Vanaprast, but not necessarily sannyas. And here, Arjuna already is trying to sort of jump through those stages and prematurely get through to renunciation. I want to renounce this world and everything. I don't even want to fight. And Krishna smiles because, hey Arjuna, you will not be able to do this. It's not in your nature. You're a Kshatriya. You're a warrior. This is your life. This is who you are. He knows that. And yet, he smiles because his friend is temporarily overcome with these feelings. And he understands him. And then, he takes on the role, Krishna takes on the role as a guru, to instruct his friend. And he speaks that you are speaking learned words. You are mourning for that which is not worthy of grief, Arjuna. Those who are wise lament neither for the living nor the dead. This is the next verse where Krishna actually speaks. And indirectly he calls Arjuna a bit of a fool. Srila Prabhupada mentions in the purport. He's not saying that to chastise his friend. He's basically making the distinction that those who are absorbed in this kind of lamentation for things which should not be lamented over are actually fools. I mean, it's not like we stand here and we point a finger at other people. It's all of us who live here. You know, we spend time lamenting over things that in the real, actual perspective of things and time shouldn't be lamented over. We spend a lot of our time in life, which is so precious. Having a human form of life is very precious. It should be used in engagement for things that can only be used in this human form of life, such as developing a higher consciousness and understanding who we are in relation to the Supreme. But yet we spend our time sometimes lamenting, grieving righteously over things that should not be lamented over. Why? And Krishna says further on that these people are already dead by my order, my supreme order. Krishna has a plan already in place. And we are the instruments that are going to be used in this process. But yet we tend to forget the bigger picture sometimes. If there are certain isolated incidents in our lives or connected incidents in our life that bring us grief, we sort of sit and, regurgitate over these incidents over and over again. Our consciousness, our mind, our whole being is sort of engrossed in this mood, in this incident. And we don't realize that time and life is slipping away as we're doing this. And for what? For something that is temporary? It's not that we don't feel emotions or attachment. Here, Arjuna's lamentation over his family is sort of, coming to the limelight. And it's not described in very paltry words. This indicates that he would soon be free from the false lamentation resulting from family affection and would be enlightened with perfect knowledge of self-realization or Krishna consciousness. So, false lamentation resulting from family affection. Prabhupada is not condemning familial affection here, but the attachment to it. And that's something that we have to work on. Having affection for family is not a crime. It comes naturally. But if we're so absorbed and so attached to that idea of it and that concept of it, that we cannot discharge our proper duties, our dharma, we cannot fulfill the purpose of this life, then that attachment is actually, it's actually doing the opposite of what it should. These kind of relationships should nourish us as human beings, should encourage us and encourage one another to fulfilling our purpose and goal in life. But if these relationships are a hindrance to that, then we have a problem. then we need guidance, like Arjuna. We need to seek guidance from bona fide spiritual master. Those who have seen the truth, those who understand and know and can guide us in the proper direction. Okay, so it's 8:05. And maybe we should take some questions, have some discussion. Oh yeah, I just wrote down a question. pertaining to this verse also, that Arjuna chastised of enemy told Krishna, "Govinda, I shall not fight," and fell silent. Actually, he was saying to Krishna, "I'm not going to fight unless I'm convinced that I have to do it." This I sort of picked up from the lecture that Srila Prabhupada delivered. That actually, Arjuna is telling him, "I've lost my motivation to fight, seeing all these people assembled before me, all my relatives, my cousins, my uncles, my teachers. I don't have the motivation to fight anymore. So convince me. You are my guru. I've become despondent. Please convince me to fight. Convince me of my dharma. Convince me of the right path." And back to the point that I made at the beginning, where Krishna and Arjuna were friends of the equal status. And then it comes to a point where one has to decide, okay, although this person is my friend, and it's sort of an ego thing also, are we willing to sort of put our ego aside by accepting someone of an equal status, or even someone of a lower status? Srila Prabhupada said that we can find guidance just like finding gold in a dirty place. One should be able to take that gold, because it's valuable. So it's also an ego thing, you know. How many of us are willing to actually put aside our egos and take guidance from people who are on an equal level of us, or even lower level? What to speak of our gurus on a much higher level, but what about people who are on the same level and lower? So I thought it was a valuable lesson that Arjuna was showing to us. Alright, I'd like to end there and take questions from me. And it's not that we accept them on the same level as the spiritual master, but one should be able to learn and take guidance from anyone in anything. For example, Prabhupada has written one of these books, I think it's The Path to Enlightenment, where he speaks about the tree as a teacher, all the different natural elements as a teacher, where we should be able to draw from their qualities and learn the tolerance, the understanding, the patience or the bountifulness that the tree is able to give and withstand. And this is directly our Siddhanta. Trinadapi suni chena trayorapi sahishnuna amanina manadena kirtaniya savahari. So we learn from the tree, we learn from the grass, the straw in the street, we learn from these things. It's not that we have the ego that, that's not on the same level as me. It's there in the street and I'm here sitting on some cushion. Okay, that's maybe a crude example, but you know, this person is a meat-eating karmic demon and I cannot learn anything from them. No! Even these people, it's not that, you know, there's a whole debate about their qualities being spiritual and this and that, but the point is, if there's gold there, if there's a good quality, Prabhupada never denied even that. He saw it and he accepted it. That is the vision that one needs to have of. That you'd be able to utilize that in the service of Krishna. It's like modern technology. Prabhupada was not averse to it. If it could be used in Krishna's service, in the Yukta Vairagya principle, then use it. Whoever made it benefits. But it's not that we have an ego that, because, you know, this person is my friend, I have such familial relationships with him. Even Arjuna apologizes to Krishna. You know, we've shared the same bed. We've jokingly spoken to each other. And I have publicly just spoken to you in jest, like this. Forgive me, Krishna. He speaks like this because the relationship had changed. They're not just pals anymore, you know? But here Arjuna puts aside his ego and submits to his friend that he once held and hit and joked with. So that was the point I was just trying to convey, that there's a very good quality to be able to see with open vision. Yeah, this is someone of the same level or lower, but if they have something that they can contribute, speak something of quality, take it. That's what is implied. Where does he, what does he say about envious? Confidential knowledge may never be explained to those who are not austere or devoted or engaged in devotional service, nor to one who is envious of me. Yeah, but it's sort of quite, I think, well explained in the purport of this verse already, that persons who have not undergone the austerities of religious process, all these people were in the right varnas, ashrams, in the right religious process. So all of these soldiers, everyone on that battlefield was liberated. Not by chance. Those people were there assembled, not by chance either. I think Bhujan Prabhu also speaks about how that these people, was no coincidence that all at the same time, was it 6 million? 640 million. That's not a small number of people. We're all there. Definitely not by chance or coincidence that they decided to sign on to some army at some specific time and then, you know, got there by chance. But yeah, it's true. We also have a regular, not regular principle, but one of the 10 offenses that is similar to that. You know what it is? Yeah. Don't preach to the... Yeah, I think it's the 9th, 8th, 9th. Yeah, so it's a similar principle. Is it? Does it mean that we don't preach? who decides who is faithless? Who decides who is? But the high principle is that we preach. Now, of course, there will be people that will be extremely faithless and envious of Krishna. I mean, the problem that we're here in the material world is because we were envious of Krishna. We, us, we were envious. And that's why we're here in the material world. Yet Krishna says something like that. And sometimes it appears sort of contradictory, but, you know. Yes. that's a very effective means also. Because you see, Krishna didn't just tell him, that's it. Krishna kind of expertly drew it out of him. Because when it comes from you, yourself, that's the most effective, because then you understand it. It's better than Krishna just coming there and telling him, you know what, you died because of this. No, he drew it very expertly. Was it this? Was it that? Was it that? And then you remember by himself. Actually, yeah, he thinks about it. Oh, that was my downfall. A very, very effective way to preach. But yeah, that's it. Yes, Guruji. It's not like I'm qualified to speak on the goal of life, but as someone who is on the path to finding that, practicing something, which is a process that enables us to get there, we can understand, based on our acharyas and especially Srila Prabhupada, who is very merciful to us in the form of his literature, that describes this goal of human life to us. Out of 8,400,000 species of life, one receives a human birth. And that human birth distinguishes us from our fellow animals on one level. And that is because we have a developed, or a more developed, intellect that allows one to introspect and to ask various questions and to understand transcendental knowledge. Knowledge of the Self, knowledge of the Lord, the Supreme Lord, and our relation to Him. Further, it also should mean that we have this intellect and intelligence, not then to abuse it, to use it for its proper purpose. But it's not that humankind has not displayed abuse of it. Even the creator of the atom bomb or LSD have lamented over their creations. It's because we're given that power of intellect, intelligence. It's not that the other species are not intelligent. Animals show a very high degree of intelligence. Various have very developed senses and intelligence. But it's not that dominion, this word dominion is very highly debated, especially because in the Bible it's stated that man has dominion over animals. But dominion is not stated in the sense that it depletes, or that we are meant to you know, lord over them and use them as we dispose, at our disposal. It means that one should protect, one should use his high intelligence, his intellect, and protect those that are less than us. And that is compassion, that is on the way to developing the goal of life, which we were speaking about, which is understanding, firstly, ourselves. What are we? What makes us so different from animals? They eat, they sleep, they mate and defend, we mate and defend. So if we look at it from that platform, we're actually not so different from animals. In that sense. But the fact that we're all sitting here, gathered around for a discussion, based on subject matter that is beyond the comprehension of our fellow animals, whom we're supposed to assist. And it said that even if we chant, they get benefit. So, you know, even if it's in that sense, we're meant to assist them. But first assist ourselves. Practitioner, heal thyself. So, we need to dispel our doubts and the darkness of ignorance. Sri Prabhupada said, okay, although everyone who is born as a human being has this faculty, we still need to be educated because we're in ignorance, in gross ignorance. And only by education, by the proper education, not the education that actually derides the idea of God or godless civilization or just leads to a materialistic life. No, the education that enlightens us, that enlightens us of our being, our presence, who we are, what are we doing here, what are we meant to be doing here, how are we supposed to be living our lives in relation to people, animals, and God. So, yeah, there's a lot more that can be elaborated on the goal of life, but that's a basic outline that I can give right now, and I hope it suffices. And the number one teaching, or the first thing, or the most propounded teaching of ours is that we should distinguish, and we should show others, once we actually understand that too, but we should understand that we're not this body, and that we're distinct from matter, lifeless matter. It's propounded again and again and again, so heavily. But on this path to finding our goal of human life, it basically starts off from that point, right? Yeah. This misidentification with matter and things that are temporary has been going on for time immemorial, and it's the root cause of our suffering, because we think that we're this body and everything that's temporary around us, like the temporary lamentation again, we think that, you know, our identification lies with these temporal things, and that we don't even know that there is something within us that is eternal. So, yeah, this misidentification can only be cleared with this kind of transcendental knowledge. So, yeah. I'm glad we have Bhagavad Gita classes like this, so that we can understand even these basic principles. Sometimes we get caught up in our elaborate sort of ideas and readings, but it's very nice to come back to something simple, clear, straightforward, and to the point. Sometimes it just gives it a